Now, here's the unfortunate thing. Large corporations don't have this problem. I don't have this problem with large corporations. Corporations, large companies, they understand the difference between branding, marketing, and advertising. They know that it's three separate things. But the small business sector and independent entrepreneurs have been bamboozled. They've been duped. They think that it's one and the same, and it's not. And so when you sit on the strategic side, you have a heavier lift of educating our small business sector.
Outlaws, it's Matt Reno. Thanks for tuning into another episode of Brand Outlaw, part of Super Kick Branding. We help business owners clarify their messaging, plant their flag in the market, and stand out. If that sounds like what your brand needs, hit us up. Go to superkickbranding.com and fill out the contact form to set up a free 30-minute consultation. You know, sometimes we get on a career path and it's hard to veer off in another direction, even if you want to. Even if you wake up every day thinking, I can't keep doing this. Maybe you've invested a ton of time and money into achieving your position. Maybe it's a profession that's seen as a noble cause and earns you a lot of respect. Or maybe, and this is the hardest one to overcome, maybe it's become part of your identity to the point where you wonder what people will think of you if you do something different. It takes courage to listen to that inner voice and take what you believe is the path you're meant to be on. Today's guest, Natasha Davis, did just that. She was a registered nurse for years, but she had that nagging feeling that even though she loved what she was doing and that she was helping people, she needed a change. I'm sure it's hard for most people to wrap their heads around why anyone would give up a stable job like that and take a complete detour into the business world. But it worked. It wasn't easy. But Natasha is now the CEO of Impact Branding in Atlanta, Georgia. She listened to her heart, and after a lot of hard work and learning on the go, it paid off. We talk about making that shift and the mistakes she made in the early days. We also discuss the importance of doing the upfront strategy work before diving into brand building. That's something we hammer home a lot on Brand Outlaw. And we cover several other topics with plenty of advice for business owners in any field. Get ready for some nuggets of wisdom as we talk shop with Natasha Davis today on the Brand Outlaw podcast. Natasha Davis, thank you for joining Brand Outlaw podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to dropping a few golden nuggets today.
I know our listeners love those nuggets, so we're looking forward to this. Why don't you start by just telling us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
I am by first profession a registered nurse. I worked in emergency room and trauma, and I did that for many years. And a few years in, I started having a lot of issues with what I was doing. You know, I loved what I was doing. I went to school for it, but I started realizing I wasn't using all of my gifts. And I then realized I needed to start tapping into those higher gifts and loved business, grew up in business. And so maybe about 10 or 12 years into nursing, I started dipping my toe into business and entrepreneurship. And then shortly thereafter, I realized and discovered that there's this amazing thing called branding. And it's not the same thing as marketing, and it's not the same thing as advertising. And so I went and studied branding and went ahead and reinvented myself and went and got those degrees and all those beautiful accolades and to affirm myself as a brand strategist. And so that is who I am. I'm a brand strategist. I love business. I love branding, the strategic aspect of branding. And just being able to help people uncomplicate the complexity of it is absolutely what I love.
Let's go back to the RN part, because I find this really interesting. You obviously studied and worked for many years to get there. But once you got into it, you were saying you felt like you weren't living up to your potential, using all the skills. What exactly were you feeling when you're doing your job, and what's going through your head at that time when you're thinking, I should be doing something else?
So, you know, the old lady in Golden Girls, picture this, right? So picture this sitting in the ER. I am working. I'm giving it everything I had. Love nursing. And it literally just happened out the blue. I'm sitting in the ER and I'm like, there has got to be more to me than this. And even though I'm helping patients and I'm loving it, but I continue to gravitate to the aspects of business and marketing and strategy. And I signed up. I thought I could, you know, go ahead and quell that feeling by signing up with many different committees in the hospital so I could sit in the strategic side and do all that. And honestly, here's where everything hit me. like a 10-ton truck, man. It just took me out. I finished my 12-hour shift. I'm walking from the hospital into my car in the parking lot, and I literally feel like a lump in my throat. I felt this overwhelming wave of, you sucker. You're so scared to step out that you are sitting here doing this, and you don't even love it anymore. You're not even being a good team player. And I'm walking in a hurried pace to get to my car because all I wanted to do was get in my car and just break down and bawl. But I didn't want to do it in public because I'm too cute for that. You know what I'm trying to say? So I get into my car and I am literally bawling like a baby, crying. And I'm like, what is wrong with me? And what was wrong with me is that I felt like I was literally just, I was killing the best part of myself. Mm. Killing the best. I was literally committing slow suicide to myself. And I don't take that term lightly because I know it's a serious thing, but that's what it felt like to me. Like I was killing the best part of myself. The best part of me was trying to emerge. The best part of me was trying to come to life. And I was literally killing it every single time it stood up. And I realized that day it had to end. It was time to stop. Like you can't run from this anymore. So you're going to have to go and embrace the fact that you are not only a registered nurse. And that was hard for me because I felt like a hypocrite.
And I'm sure even if you felt like you were doing the right thing, there had to have been other people in your life who, out of concern and best intentions, may have been thinking, what are you doing? You're throwing your career away. Did you get some doubters?
Oh, yes, I did. Are you mad? You know, I'm Jamaican. And of course, you know, we have our family and like, are you crazy or something? What's wrong with you? You got that whole degree. What are you talking about? And, you know, the one thing my mother and my father, that's the one thing I've been so blessed with. They've never been my Debbie Downers. They've always supported me. They're like, you know what? You're smart. We know you have it in you. And if anyone's going to survive, you are. And you know what's the best decision. So got one degree? Well, go work hard and get the other one. So they never made me feel like I made a horrible decision. They were very supportive. So the Debbie Downers came from the other people, the external people around you looking at you like, you're crazy, right? Like you're a registered nurse. Like, what do you know about business? And I'm sitting here and I'm a reader, right? Guys, I'm a reader. So I have like four bookshelves filled from top to bottom. And one of them is filled with my nursing. One is filled with my business. So I'm a reader and I'm an avid reader. I'm constantly learning. And so in the beginning, I self-taught. And then I realized in order for me to be authentic, I'm going to have to go and get some formal education because how do I stand in front of someone and tell them, I know I'm a registered nurse, but I can do branding. You know, it's like, really? Tell me more, right? And so I had to go get that all under my belt. And so that's what I did.
What lessons did you learn as a registered nurse that prepared you for being a business owner?
Yeah, you know, I didn't realize it until after, right? Because I used to hide the fact that I was a registered nurse when I went out in the business world. Like nobody knew for years. So one of the things I realized is that one, as a nurse, we are taught to be some of the most efficient project managers of all time. You just didn't know it. Because nursing taught me how to not only manage lives, I was also managing tasks and also managing other people. As a registered nurse, especially in the emergency room, I had to not only manage my time, but I had to manage the work of my CNAs and my techs. I had to make sure that the physicians were on task. I had to make sure that my patients were getting to their x-rays and their diagnostics. They're getting back to the right place. When I tell you, I can still remember to this day what it felt like standing in an ER. And I always worked in a level one trauma center. So I was always busy, right? And so learning how to manage projects, time management, and to manage teams, that is something that nursing taught me that I transferred over into business. Critical thinking was transferred over from nursing into, especially for what I do, which is strategic planning and risk management and things like that. So being able to look at a hemorrhage and diagnose what's wrong immediately, because we can't sit there scratching our heads all day. I wonder why this guy's bleeding to death. Can't do it. You know, you need to get to the problem quickly. So I often say now, you know, I used to save lives back then as a nurse. I save lives. Now I save companies. I'm still in the life-saving business.
But what about mistakes you made on the path? Because you're just doing something really so different. And you said at first you were self-taught. And if you could go back and change a few things, what would you do? Or at least tell other people to watch out for these mistakes.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So this is a 24-hour show, right? Because I got a bunch of mistakes I could talk about, right? Let me give it to you. So here's one of the biggest mistakes that I learned, and I learned quickly, is that I had to stop paying attention to what society was saying and the masses were saying, because half of it's not even true. People were trying to transfer the information that you don't need money to start a business. You don't need money to scale a business. And that's the furthest thing from the truth. Furthest thing from the truth. You need money to do anything. If I need to register my business with the Secretary of State, they're not free. I got to pay for that. And so scaling the business, I realized the first mistake or the myth is if you don't invest in your business, you can't expect others to invest in you. So the myth of you don't need money to start a business, that's a lie. You need money to get moving. The other thing, mistake that I made, and I talk about this often, the other mistake I made was in the beginning, I thought the quickest way for me to get from ground zero to at least stabilize in the business was to go borrow money. So I went to the credit union and I borrowed money. Here's where the mistake was. I did not have a plan for each dollar. So I got the money. I had no plan for how I was going to deploy that money. And I promise you, till this day, I cannot tell you what I spent that money on, and I had to pay that money back.
Yeah.
So that was a huge mistake. Borrowing money to operate the business is not something I subscribe to, and I don't encourage it, because unless you have a plan for every single dollar, how are you going to deploy that dollar in order for it to give you a ROI? If I don't have a plan, if I deploy a dollar, I need to get a 4X on that. And until I know how I'm going to get my 4X, don't deploy the dollar. So that was a huge mistake I made. Another big mistake I made was I thought social media was the end all be all. I mean, put a post and keep it rolling. They're coming in, baby. They're coming in. Newsflash, they're not coming. They're not coming. So I realized that following the myths of society, I realized I was sinking. I was sinking because I thought all I had to do was put a post up and that was all I needed to do. And I would just go borrow money to fund the business. That was a big mistake. And on top of that, I didn't need to invest anything. I just didn't take money. It just happens. You build it, they'll come. I'll tell you a funny story. When I first went off on my own, I was in my office, you know, back when I started business 18 years ago, you know, we still had phones on the desk. Mm-hmm. You know, so I got this beautiful phone on the desk, and I'm talking about my desk was clean, y'all. Clean. It was pretty. Mm-hmm. I could see the desk. And I'm sitting here, and I got my computer up, and I'm telling you, and I felt real proud of myself. And you know what? The phone didn't ring. And I couldn't understand it. Thought I didn't pay the bill. So I picked the phone up, made sure it was there. I called somebody. Hey, could you call me back? Because I need to make sure it's ringing. The phone didn't ring. And I'm sitting here wondering, first of all, you didn't go and hunt for anything. You didn't go hunt for business. So how are you going to enjoy the hunt if you never went and hunted? And so that was another mistake, is again, thinking if I build it, they'll come. So I had to learn how to be a hunter in business and how to move the business from point A to point B. Huge mistakes. I've learned. Since then, learned.
I'm curious. Can you tell us about the very first client that you had?
Yeah, let's see. I could go back way back then. So let me tell you, the first client I got, I didn't know what I was doing. Because I tell you, the first 4 years in business was hell. I didn't know what I was doing. I was just running amok. I had a skill, but I didn't know how to package it correctly. And so the first client that came to me, I was able to provide them the service, but I didn't know how to manage the client. And that client came to me and they asked me, here's what I remember. I was so eager to help and so eager to use my skill. Everything that they asked me for, I just said yes, even though I know that wasn't my wheelhouse. And I was like, I can figure it out. I'm a smart cookie. I mean, you know, whoop the lie, search it up, right? And so I got the client and you know, I didn't set clear expectations. I didn't set terms. My service agreement was really poor. I didn't have a process in place to how I was going to get paid. That client went months without paying me and I didn't realize it. And by the time, you know, we've all done this before, you know, you didn't invoice on time and then the next month come and you didn't invoice and now you're two invoices behind. The likelihood of that client paying back them two invoices plus the current one is very slim because you can't get that money back. And so that client taught me a lot of do's and don'ts, especially where it came from, how to manage a client. And that's where I started paying attention to developing them systems and processes, and understand that's the lifeblood of a business, right? Aside from clients, your client roster. And so that's what that first client, I remember they came to me, I was out networking, and I sold it, but I can help you. Give me a chance. I can do it. And I kept dropping the price. Man, I remember my first service, man, that thing was so cheap. But the client trusted me. I was able to give them what they need, but I kept saying yes. And over time, that's another thing I learned. Just because you can doesn't mean you should. Mm. Just because you can does not mean you should. It's not your wheelhouse. Stand down.
Yeah. I think we've all been in the position that you were just describing, where we're so eager to, one, to help someone, but two, we think, man, if I don't get this client, I'm just never going to take off. So I better give them everything they want. And then there's all these things you don't even think about putting in the contract, if you're writing a contract at all for that first client. And so I've heard it said that a contract is a diary of all the times clients have burned you. So every time someone takes advantage of you, it ends up costing you money or costing you time, put that in your contract. It never happens again.
Yeah, you're right. That's happened 6 years ago. I was on a real vacation. Finally was able to go on a real vacation where I didn't have to schlep the laptop with me and answer the call, right? Mm-hmm. And I had my team, man. I had a beautiful team. Everybody was rocking and rolling. And I made it clear, I am leaving the country. Y'all hold it down. And the client I had, this client waited until the time where I was going to be inaccessible and just started running amok, stressing out the team and then demanding to speak to me. And I'm out the country and I'm like, I have to come off of my vacation and put down my adult beverage to become coherent so I can have this conversation with you. And as soon as I came back, I got right to that contract. And you know what I put in there? When I am on vacation, I am not available. There is no hourly rate that you could pay me. So when I'm on vacation, I am not available. Family emergencies, vacations, not available. So therefore, I notify my clients when I'm going to be out of the country and I let them know you will be taken care of and you will be handled when you get back. If it's an emergency, it's because we made the mistake.
Why don't we do a little shop talk here? Yeah. What is your way of describing branding to people who they've heard the term, but don't fully understand the concept? You know, a lot of people think, oh, branding, it's just another word for logo, right? What would you say to that?
So here's how I've learned to explain it to people so they can get it. When you start talking about your brand and branding, I tell people to start looking at it as being relevant around now decisions. Being relevant around now decisions. And so that has helped people to lift the stereotype that branding is marketing and marketing is branding and it's used interchangeably. Because if I can help my clients understand and the community at large to understand, branding is about being relevant around now decisions. That takes away from, oh, it's only a logo. Oh, it's only social media posts. So it helps people to elevate their thinking to say, if I want to be relevant around now decisions, I then had to communicate my relevancy. What is it that I do? How do I solve your problem? Right. And so when we step back and we say, as a brand, we're structuring the conversation to let customers, potential customers know, here is how I solve your problem and how I remove your pain. And when you are in pain or you have a problem that needs to be solved, here is why you should think of me first. Being relevant around now decisions. Take away the pain. I have a problem. I need solved. So that's how I help people to eliminate and to start to sever that thought of branding as logos and you know, colors and posts and stuff like that. Branding has two sides, right, guys? We know that. Branding has a creative side and it has a strategic side. But how can one deploy the creative side of branding if the strategic side of branding was never developed? If we never talked about the customer, if we never talked about the avatar, if we never talked about the why we show up, if we never talked about the where we're going, and the when we're going to get there and the who we need to get there. If we never talked about how we're going to show up to make an economic footprint, what's our world domination? We've never talked about that. How are we out here deploying logos and colors and posts and things like that? We don't even know who we're talking to, right? And so I help the marketplace understand branding is, think of the strategic side. Let's set the roadmap first. Let's get the roadmap first so you know where you're going. it's the, you know, some people who like to bake, right? Yeah, go bake a cake. Well, don't I need a recipe? Brand is your recipe to making a perfect moist cake. Otherwise, it's going to be dry.
That's a great analogy. Yeah, you've got to ask those questions up front. It's you can't just show up to a branding agency and say, I've got an idea for a logo. Just need someone to make it. Or I know the colors already. Slow down. Let us ask you some questions about your goals, your audience.
Yeah. It's unfortunate though, because we've had persons enter into the industry, and because the word brand and branding is so sexy, everybody started gravitating to it, right? I'm a photographer, so I do branding. I'm a website developer, I do branding. I'm a graphic designer, I do branding, right? And so that element sitting on the creative side, people and society, small business specifically, have been bamboozled to think that is branding, and that is not branding. That is not the full essence of branding. And it's persons who do practice strategic branding have the heavier lift, like myself, have the heavier lift of educating the marketplace. I understand what you thought. Let me help you to clear it up so that it makes perfect sense to you. Because I'm telling you, the marketplace is completely confused. I've gotten calls. I'm trying to do my branding and I need a logo. Okay. So do you want branding or you want a logo? You need a graphic design. No, I need branding. But you just said you want a logo. Yeah, it's the same thing. Okay, let's have a come to Jesus talk, because it's not the same thing.
Right.
You know? So yeah. So unfortunately, the marketplace and business has been confused, and that's the small business. Now here's the unfortunate thing. Large corporations don't have this problem. I don't have this problem with large corporations. Corporations, large companies, they understand the difference between branding, marketing, and advertising. They know that it's three separate things. But the small business sector and independent entrepreneurs have been bamboozled. They've been duped. They think that it's one and the same, and it's not. And so when you sit on the strategic side, you have a heavier lift of educating our small business sector.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. The corporations, they already have an advantage over the small businesses in terms of dollars, but then there's another advantage they have when they understand branding, and a lot of small businesses don't. That's a great point. And that's why it's so important to educate people about that.
Plus they can buy top talent to be on their team. So those organizations are going to have people that sit at the top that really understand branding from high level all the way down to a micro level.
Yeah. Being able to do that. And that's where the struggle comes in with the small business, is how do we continue to infuse that education into the small business? Because I like to tell people, just because you're small doesn't mean you need to think small, be small, and practice small. But as a small business, it just means, okay, my reach might be a little bit shorter, but you can still reach strong. You can still reach strong as a small business. But when you get on the line and a small business doesn't want to understand, that's where the pain then comes in. Because that, like you said, Matt, that would be the advantage that a large corporation does have over a small business, is the basic knowledge and understanding and the willingness and to appreciate, let me go get someone who really can support the development of our brand before we go out and do marketing and advertising.
What verticals do you specialize in?
We hang out with our government agencies. We hang out with service-based businesses. We do some work with consumer goods and product bases, but our niche is with service-based businesses. We do a lot of work in healthcare, as you can imagine. I do work a lot of work with healthcare. And as of about 3 years ago, we've crossed over in doing a lot of work with trucking and logistics, so the transportation industry.
What do you see as the number one common problem in the service industry?
The number one problem that I have seen in all the years I've been doing it is not understanding who they're talking to. If we could spend time really drilling down into the avatar, that would shorten the time it takes and also decrease the amount of money it takes to go and reach a good qualified lead. Because once we can be clear about, as a service-based business, once we can be clear, this is who my avatar is. Like, I can close my eyes. Everyone close your eyes and I start to describe it. You should be able to visualize it as a description comes. If I can describe my avatar down to that granular level, that means I can now structure and develop content that will resonate specifically with them, and that I will become a magnet. It's like turning your content into a magnet. That then magnetizes and brings the right ideal client. What happens in service-based is they think they want to take care of everybody, and we can't. As I said before, just because you can doesn't mean you should, right? And so we step into that, and that tends to be the heavier problem. It's not about the money, because I promise you, if you can become a magnet to the ideal client, the right people will come. And if the right person also means that they can pay. That's the caveat too, right? The right person also means they can pay. The right company also means they can pay. So if I have a magnet that's drawing the right people that can pay, then I don't have a money problem.
What are some of the biggest problems that you're trying to solve with trucking companies?
Trucking companies that I encounter, they typically don't have a strategic plan to know where I'm going, how I'm going to get there, when I'm going to get there. They just hit them. As long as the wheels are turning on trucks, they couldn't care less until they realize that they need to care. And then in addition, having very clear structured processes. As with any business, right? Systems, processes, operations equals profitability. When we have companies that say, I got all my systems down packed, but I don't have a process in place and I don't really know my operations to the T, I'm not going to have profitability. I'm going to have some good, clean systems, but I don't have a process for it and it doesn't tie back to ops. So that's what I find a lot with trucking companies is that there is no strategic plan and there is really a disconnect where it comes with the operations and the process.
It's amazing they would ignore something like that. Process is so important in that industry because you want to be as efficient as possible.
Agreed.
You know, dealing with gas prices and time, especially depending on what you're delivering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's important. I mean, understanding bits and pieces of a supply chain is one thing, right? But understanding how to tie that to the operations. And that's why I often say as a business, we need to not only tie the strategic plan to the operations, but we need to tie KPIs to operations. If I don't have indicators, and I'm not tying it to operations and I don't know what I'm really doing, I'm just flying by the seat of my pants. So being able to tie it all together. And a lot of times trucking companies, this is where trucking companies get stuck because that's why they get a lot of fees. They get hit with a lot of penalties and fees. Why? Because the processes are not there. There are no firm processes. They're usually just going. Long as the wheels are turning and they got the technology and the systems are up, people are coming in, people are going, the truck is moving, the load gets dropped, pick it up, put it down, pick up another one, keep going. But then we get to a point where, hey, where's the process that comes into play when you have a red flag that someone's certification is about to fail or someone's driver's license needs to be renewed or someone's supposed to do the drug screen, right? All these little things come in. You know, a lot of times companies mess around, trucking companies, and they end up paying unnecessary fees. Why? Because they missed the mark on renewing their MC number. They missed the mark on renewing and re-upping their insurance appropriately. They missed the mark. And then they're paying unnecessary fees. It's all about process.
Why do you think a lot of small businesses might skip strategic branding, other than maybe being confused about what it is? But why would they pass over that?
To be honest, because it's not sexy. It takes too much work. Mm-hmm. A lot of times small businesses, what do they want? Immediate results. I need immediate results because why? I need this money. I need these clients. I got to meet payroll. I got to. And when you sit down and you say to a small business, pump the brakes. Let's take 3 months to drill it all out, map it out, cover our bases, cross every T, dot every I, develop contingency plans. Let's develop the strategy and the approach. Let's put the right people in place. Let's do the research. Let's vet everybody before we open the doors and the floodgates. You tell a small business that and they're like, no, we don't have time for that. Let's just figure it out along the way. And so a lot of times I'll capture them. I'm like, if you could just measure twice and cut once, your life would be easier. Your life would be easier. For every 1 minute you spend in strategic planning, you're saving $10 in implementation. And so oftentimes I'll capture their attention that way. And they're like, okay, hold on a minute. What are you saying? Just pump the brakes. And usually that's what I find. Because when I get a small business and they say, you know what, you're right. We've been trying this for how many years? It's not working. And they say, well, let me cross over. Let me do it your way. they realized, oh my God, this was such a time saver. It was a money saver. I saved on resources. I didn't make silly mistakes, right? And so that's really what it is. It's not sexy. It takes too much time. They want it now. I have an idea. I got a product. Roll it out. Run. Put up a post on Monday. Whoa, wait a minute. Hold on.
Yeah, you don't have time for this now, but are you going to have time for this a couple of years from now when you've had all these processes in place for a while and now you're realizing I need to redo them. I need to rebrand. I need to do all this stuff over again. How much time are you going to have then?
I've seen it. It's hard. It's like I like to develop scenarios as well. I like when we do strategic plans, I develop scenarios. And the scenarios that I develop with my team is, okay, here's what we're going to do. So here's an example, right? I'm going to give a real elementary example. Let's say, for example, we have a plan to go do a picnic, going to the park to do a picnic. That's a big idea. Well, the first scenario I have is how many people you want? Well, we want 5 to 10 people. Okay, so we want 5 to 10 people. Okay, scenario one is suppose the weather, you rain. So it rains, you have 5 people. It doesn't rain and you have 5 people. That's 2 scenarios. And then say you do get to your 10, it rains and it doesn't rain. So you got 4 scenarios. So no matter what scenario hits you, you're ready. And so when I do strategic planning, I like to sit down and say, let's look at all our scenarios, because that is a form of contingency planning. If I say I want to meet the needs of 10 new customers or 5 to 10 new customers, okay, how much staff you have now? I got a staff of 3. How many more staff you need to onboard? I need 2 more staff. Okay, no problem. Let's build out all the scenarios. You got 10 new customers, but you have the same 3 staff. What are you going to do? Or you only got 5 new customers, but now you got 5 staff. What are you going to do? What's going to be the plan? So now we know where we're going. Let's build out the different scenarios. It's like a GPS, right? If I'm on the GPS and I'm heading to a direction, suppose there's an accident or a roadblock, I can just reroute. It's the same concept. I'm going to destination A, but in case there's an accident, a roadblock, I should be able to reroute to get around all that, but I'm still heading to my destination.
So important to build that ability to pivot quickly.
Yes.
In your strategic planning.
Yeah, it's all about the pivot. That's what made the difference between companies that survived the pandemic and companies that did not. That was the big difference. There was no contingency. It was one way or no way. And that is not a way to operate a business. It was one way or no way. And unfortunately, I remember it was really disheartening here in Atlanta here. This company, this restaurant, has been around for years. They were like 30 something years. They never grew. They kind of stayed the same, but they reaped the benefits, right? They were sitting on the benefits of being this 30-year business, whatever. The pandemic hit, and within 2 months, the business was shut down. I'm still baffled by it. You mean to tell me you've been in business 30 years, and you could not sustain 2 months through a pandemic? What have we been doing?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I have a feeling everyone alive today will, if they're starting a business, they're going to have pandemic contingency plans, but then a couple of generations down the road, we're going to forget about that. And then in 100 years, there's going to be another pandemic. And
another situation. Right.
Yeah. We didn't learn.
Yeah.
You've written that a lot of small business owners have experienced providing a product or service, but they don't have the entrepreneurial mindset necessary for growth. What do you mean by that entrepreneurial mindset in this case? And how can a business owner develop that?
So sometimes when people start a business, they start a business out of a couple of things. Most people start a business because they're pissed off with their current boss, or they got laid off or fired and they have to do something and they had a passion. They want to start something. And then every once in a while, you'll find someone who said, I'm going to step into business because I really love business, right? Those are not the people that have the biggest struggle. People that have the biggest struggle are the ones that still held on to the employee mindset. You can't operate a business with an employee mindset. And so the ones that have the struggle never shift the mind to being an entrepreneur, and they still hold on to the employee mindset. The employee mindset is, I'm sitting here and I'm waiting for someone to tell me what to do, when to do, how to do it. Did I do a good job? The employee mindset is, even if I don't work, I still will eat. Right? That's an employee mindset. Yeah. The entrepreneur makes it, when you step into the mindset of the entrepreneur, now the shift has begun to happen, because as an entrepreneur, you realize, hold on, I gotta do something. If I don't step into this, it's not gonna happen. The employee thinks it'll get done. Somebody will do it. Step into the shoes of an entrepreneur. You put in an entrepreneur, which is an employer mindset. It's two different mindsets.
Yeah, it's really sounds like it's really about taking responsibility.
Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely taking responsibility, owning what we're doing as a business, owning what you're doing as a inside of the industry of it, right? And then realizing, just like anything else, there's a growth stage. There's a journey from being a solopreneur to becoming a CEO. Everybody, again, I told you, it's that sexy word. I'm a CEO. No, you're not. You just started your business 3 months ago. There's no way you could be a CEO, because a CEO has a very different mindset and they have a very different business structure. It took me years to get to CEO status. I was a solopreneur and entrepreneur for a while. And then when my bank account hit zero, I realized something has got to change. Most business people, they hit that point, that bottom point where it's like, okay, this can't work anymore. It's not about the passion anymore, right? Because, you know, passion doesn't take me to the bank. I'd be as passionate as I want to, but I'd also be hungry and broke. And so when I was being a solopreneur and being an entrepreneur, I made enough money to barely pay myself until I hit rock bottom. And I realized, okay, girlfriend, this is not going to work. It doesn't work like this. This is not how you run a business. And I had to shift over. And that's when I started making the shift. And I left behind the employee mindset and the wannabe boss. We say here in Atlanta, we got $30,000 millionaires. Okay. Well, I didn't want to be a $30,000 millionaire. I decided I'm going to be a real millionaire. So I had to shift my mindset.
Yeah.
But it's a journey. We don't start a business today. We know everything. We make a lot of mistakes. We have to learn. We have to get rid of bad habits, right? Especially if you've been in business for any length of time.
Yeah, there's this constant state of evaluation that you have to be in. Not second guessing, but taking a critical look at the decisions you've made, saying what's working, what's not, being open to feedback.
Yeah.
That's all part of taking responsibility for your business.
Absolutely. If we can't step back and ask ourselves, you know, when I have my team meetings, I always ask at the end, what can I do? Well, the first thing I ask is there anything that you're waiting on from me that I have not gotten to you? That's accountability. That's being humble. Is there anything that you're waiting on from me that I have not gotten to you? Then the next thing I ask is, what can I do to be a better leader? Tell me, what am I not doing right? How can I be a better leader? Am I communicating correctly? Am I supporting you? You know, tell me, what can I do to be a better leader? And I have empowered my team to be forthcoming. Don't sit there, oh no, you're the best thing since wheat bread. No, I'm not. I can't be, right. You know? Mm-hmm. So I've empowered them. No, I want you to be straightforward. And they'll tell me why. Because they see me every day. They see how I function.
Totally understand. I mean, on some level, they have to be scared at the same time about talking, frankly. Because, I mean, there is that level of, like, I'm still your employer. Like, even though I may want to tell you about yourself, I can't go too far into that because I don't want to offend you. So right. Like, for your situation, like, who outside of your employees are like your accountability?
Oh, wow. I have a very vocal accountability circle. And these are people who are, when you say a best friend, really is a best friend that will pull me on the carpet, like, clear as day, no holes barred, shut it down. Like, yeah, you're being a jerk. Like, that's not going to work. Or, you know, and of course, I still have my mother alive and she is cutthroat, clear as day, cutthroat. You know, I can't even use a cuss word in front of my mother. And I'm grown, y'all. I'm grown. Okay. I'm grown. And my mother does not play that. She's like, hold on a minute. But she also will let me know, what are you doing? What's going on? And I have a lot of really great people around me who they couldn't care less that I wrote 3 books. They don't care that I have all these awards. They don't care that I speak on stage. They couldn't care less. To them, you are Tosh. That's who you are. And let me tell you where you're smelling yourself. You're acting like you don't have, I mean, they come out the gate, y'all. No respect. None. You need real people around you, because I don't like a bunch of yes-ums around me. A whole bunch of no, because you can't grow through that. You know, sometimes you need people to see your blind spot. In addition, I personally have mentors and coaches that hold me accountable as well. Because I truly believe the day that a business owner is not accountable to anyone but themselves is the day we got a problem. So I am actually accountable to many people. If I say, here's the plan, here's what I'm doing, I will vocalize that and tell them, here's what we're doing, and they hold me accountable. I have a mentor, I have a coach, and I have people around me who they know. Be transparent. Tell me the real deal. And everyone needs that. Everyone needs it. It may not be a spouse all the time, because, you know, that can create some problems in the house. But the spouse, if you have a spouse that's truly a friend and a best friend, your friend should be able to tell you when you're acting out of pocket.
Absolutely.
Let's wrap up by talking about the charitable division of your company. 12 years ago, you launched the Target 1000 campaign to support community development and education. So specifically, where do you focus your efforts and how do you choose the causes that you want to support?
Yeah, you know, I focus heavily on domestic violence and also education. Huge, huge advocate of prevention of domestic violence and also promoting of education, not only in youth, but also in adults, male or female. And so I will, those are the organizations that I usually and generally encourage to support those team members that are on the Target 1000 campaign committee. They even will support, and they understand the mission and the vision behind it. They will actually track down organizations to say, hey, we want to support. How can we show up and how can we help? And how do we bring our talents and our heart to your space? So Target 1000 is really about helping 1,000 people a year in any capacity, whether it's through us giving back financially or us giving back in skill or talent, resources. It's really a give back. And I believe that that keeps us humble and we're sowing good seeds out in the universe. One thing I can say is it only takes one bad month for your whole life to get flipped upside down. Mess around and lose every client. Mess around and not get a paycheck. You know, it only takes one bad month for everything to get flipped upside down. So I'm very sensitive to that and empathetic to that. And so being able to support different causes, but primarily those are causes. I usually will back up and support homelessness as well. I love to cook. And I would cook and we package food and go down to areas where homeless individuals were living on the street. And we just give out food, the styrofoam containers of food, talk to people, treat them with a little bit of respect, you know, some dignity. Because again, it only takes one bad month. And that could be anybody.
Yeah, you're doing wonderful work there. And I think that's a good place to wrap up. Natasha, yeah. We really appreciate you being on the show, sharing some of those nuggets of wisdom with our listeners. And it was great talking branding with you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity. And thank you so much for having me on. I hope it's been valuable to all those who listen.
Big thanks to Natasha for joining us on the podcast. You can learn more about her at natashadavisvisionary.com. And thanks to you for tuning in. You're awesome. You want to be a little more awesome? We would greatly appreciate a nice review on your podcast app of choice. You need more Brand Outlaw advice? Head to the content page of superkickbranding.com. Until then, we'll talk again soon on the Brand Outlaw podcast.